returns from present in the past. Every week will be an animated bash. What a cartoon! What a cartoon! Maybe a short but mostly sharp. We'll talk, we'll analyze, exploring as we go. What a cartoon!
Hello, everybody, and welcome to What a Cartoon Movie, where we're suffering from honey withdrawal. I'm one of your hosts, the podcaster of Very Little Brain, Bob Mackey, and this is an audio exploration of every animated movie ever. Who is here with me today, as always?
Host, Huff and Fluff, it's Henry Gilbert.
And this month's movie is Winnie the Pooh.
Think, think, think.
No hurry, Pooh, just take your time.
Take my time. What a wonderful idea.
And yes, it's another episode of What a Cartoon Movie, and this month we picked Winnie the Pooh because we are kicking off another summer podcast series. You know them, you love them, and they're almost always Disney-related. In fact, I think they've all been Disney-related. Is that true, Henry?
I guess all the ones we covered at Pixar were before they got bought by Disney, right. But they're Disney films, too, I'd call them.
Yes. And that's just Disney-adjacent. Well, we like covering Disney movies. You like hearing about them. So this summer, we are covering four Disney movies from the 2010s. I believe we are going in order. We're kicking things off with 2011's Winnie the Pooh. And then we're doing Wreck-It Ralph, and then Zootopia, and then Big Hero 6. So if you enjoy those movies, and I'm sure they're all pretty enjoyable, you will enjoy being with us this summer. So put on your sunscreen, shut the window, stay inside. You cannot listen to these outside. It'll ruin the experience. Too many noises and distractions.
And when we looked at the list of 2010s Disney films, it really did seem like a good, if we were Gen Z, maybe we would have called this like another Disney renaissance, because there were enough like good movies that also were insanely successful films as well.
Yeah, and in this decade, we were online, we were podcasting, we have pre-established opinions. Who knows if they will change? So look forward to a fun summer of more Disney films as we cover them on What a Cartoon Movie. And yes, we're kicking things off with the last traditionally animated Disney feature film, which is 2011's Winnie the Pooh. Many out there think it is The Princess and the Frog, and they are wrong. It is this movie, which, to be fair, is barely a movie, but it still counts, damn it, because it was put into theaters.
Yeah, I would definitely count it as, especially like staff-wise, it is like the last gasp of the, I really look forward to hearing the history from Bob here, because just looking at the credits, I was like, oh, all of these names who are like Disney Renaissance superstars, this is like the last time they got to animate a theatrical 2D movie. And it does feel like the end in a wistful way.
Yeah, and even though it's slight, it is really a victory lap for this branch of animation, which ends in 2011. This is basically it, but everyone gets to do a little bit on this little project, and it's a very nice little movie, a little quaint movie. Before I continue, though, what is our history with Winnie the Pooh and the Pooh franchise in general? Henry, how about you?
Well, as a little kid, definitely I was getting Winnie the Pooh things. Like, it is, at least for an American, it is a standard of the last like 50, 60 years that Disney animated adaptations of Winnie the Pooh are just surefire, easy kids entertainment for kids like 6 and under, preschool age kids, and safe and timeless. And it worked on me too. Like, I watched a lot of the Winnie the Pooh and Tigger 2, which we covered that back in 2019 on here, but I watched a lot of that. Unfortunately, like, I was almost got to be too old when the new Adventures of Winnie the Pooh began in the late 80s. So unfortunately, I was kind of stuck with the Disney Channel scary, in retrospect, animatronic Winnie the Pooh a lot.
Welcome
a
to Pooh Corner.
Yes.
Nobody wants to go to the Pooh Corner.
It's awful. It really, but I loved it as a kid. My mom hated it too, but I liked watching the old ones as well. And as I grew up and you know, got older and aged out of Christopher Robin's age, like, I came to appreciate the much smarter than it seems on the surface writing of all of the characters, plus the amazing animation that's pretty much on display in like every Winnie the Pooh adaptation that Disney did.
Yeah, as for me, I was introduced to Winnie the Pooh through the Saturday morning cartoon, and I loved it because this may seem blasphemous to many of you out there. I feel like it's a better version of Muppet Babies. There, I said it. I'm sorry. I'm sorry, everybody. I said it.
I'd agree with that. It's less, I like that it's not, as far as better, like it's pure, that it's not set like now, like they're not talking about like Star Wars or any like specifics that like lock it in time, for one thing.
Yeah, there's no public domain clips of that shaky bridge.
Oh God, so many times, yes. Which also like saves money, like it's cheaping out in a way too, yeah.
And we like Muppet Babies, but to me, this is a better version of it. But yes, it was a great cartoon, most of it animated in Japan by TMS. Many of those folks who later grew on to be Walt Disney Animation Japan, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But that was a great series, and that's what got me into it. And I honestly didn't look much outside of that series until a girlfriend in the early aughts wanted to watch The Many Adventures of Winnie the Pooh with me, which is the package film from, I believe, 77. I think that's it, which packages those three shorts, adds some wraparound material, etc. So it wasn't until like maybe 25 years ago that I actually saw the movie version of Pooh. But to me, I always think of these characters as like TV characters. And I think Disney was very savvy in, or Michael Eisner in particular was very savvy about letting people have access to these characters that are normally like paywall behind re-releases or VHS tapes. So in that sense, it really worked on me.
Yeah, I, you know, the Winnie the Pooh, you were lucky, I guess, that you didn't see The Many Adventures as a kid, though maybe you weren't as anxiety-ridden as me, Piglet style, as a kid. But like the Heffalump and Woozle song, like as a real little kid, actually like scared me. Like it's a song about imagining something that's scary and then you're actually scared. I wonder if Gen Z children or maybe even Gen Alpha children have that feeling about the Baxin from this movie.
Yeah, I wonder. Yeah, because I just rewatched The Many Adventures of Winnie the Pooh for the first time since like 2002. And when we got to the Heffalumps and Woozle scenes, I thought, well, this is the nightmare fuel, I guess. But I saw it for the first time when I was like 20, so it didn't work on me. But I like how in that era of Disney, there was the idea of the fun scare. And a lot of the old rides are based around the fun scare, because I feel like a lot of it is kids will enjoy that, but also parents will enjoy seeing their kids frightened when they have to sit through a thing they don't necessarily like. Like, haha, look, I got your ass.
I've heard parents talk about going on fun scare stuff at Disney, things like that, where the kid is scared at first, and then when it's over, then the kid says to the parent, they get to say like, oh, mom, dad, you were scared. I wasn't scared. Like the kid gets to then feel braver than their parents and make up lies, these lying children.
And they want to do it again. They always want to go on the ride again. But yes, that's basically my history with the movie. But for the sake of this podcast, I didn't need to do this, but because these movies are so short, I ended up watching the Tigger movie, Piglet's Big Movie, The Many Adventures of Winnie the Pooh. I probably will watch the Heffalump movie before we record the movie segment, but these are just all very available. They're all very short. They're all very digestible. So I have had a steady diet of poo for the past couple of weeks. And yes, if you go back to our 2019 episode, we made a lot of poo jokes because it's inescapable and it still makes me laugh. When I'm writing my notes, like Disney, Disney put out a lot of poo content, or they flooded the market with poo. It's just, these jokes all write themselves, and I can't not be tickled by them. I'm sorry.
I was proud at the start of this movie, in the 2011 one even, that it starts with like, they could try to change things and be like, or Winnie for short. But no, at the start, it's like, no, or Pooh for short. Everybody calls him Pooh.
No, but yeah, nobody says Winnie. No one wants to acknowledge Winnipeg in this film or any of the other Winnie the Pooh movies or shorts or TV shows or direct-to-video movies. Anyhow, like you said, Henry, we did cover Winnie the Pooh in 2019 on an episode of What a Cartoon that's still online. You can still listen to it. And we did cover the Tigger short in particular. I'll go over a bit of the Pooh origin story here, but if you want to know more about the history of the character, where Pooh came from, check out that episode. There will be a link to it in the podcast description. If something is as old as 2019, I normally will revisit it, but I re-listened to that episode, which is 2 hours long, and I thought, no, this is a good history. This stands up, and I'm not sure how, because at that point, we were doing weekly What a Cartoon podcast and like often publishing 3 or 4 podcasts a week. So I'm not sure how I found time for that, but I did. So I feel like I don't want to revisit that. That will stand. I would drop that into this podcast, but it was 7 years ago, and we sound like infants compared to our grizzled voices of today. Post-pandemic vocal fry.
That is impressive, too, that we were also editing our own podcast back then, too. Like, how did we do it?
I'm not sure, but I will give a general overview here. There is a much more in-depth discussion on that podcast. And again, if you want to hear it, check out the description. There is a link to that podcast. It makes it very easy to find for you, and it's still online. So check that out. And you can hear us talk about that Tigger short, which is wonderful. So let's talk about Winnie the Pooh. And by the way, Winnie the Pooh is hyphenated. Repeat, hyphenated. But Disney did not acknowledge that. I don't know why it's hyphenated in the original book, but it is.
Oh, wow, man. See, as somebody who appreciates a good hyphen in my favorite character, Spider-Man, mm-hmm. I had always missed that that's the original version of it that is totally ignored by the Disney Corporation.
Yes, if you see the book on the shelves, which is not going to be published by anyone, even us, it will have hyphens between Winnie the and Pooh, so check that out. So Winnie the Pooh, the character, the world, was created by Alan Alexander Milne in 1924. So Winnie the Pooh, the character, first appeared as Edward, but he immediately became Winnie the Pooh shortly afterwards. And I'll go over what the hell Winnie the Pooh means right here, just to get that out of the way. So Winnie the Pooh is the pride of Canada in its own way because he was named after an American black bear at the London Zoo named Winnie, short for Winnipeg, because the bear's owner had come from Winnipeg, but then he went back to Winnipeg.
Wow. Oh, man, the exotic Winnipeg bear in London. That's great. That's where I think after we did the Winnie the Pooh and Tigger 2 episode, somebody shared with us, I remember watching, because it got suggested by a listener, a public service video commercial of like Canada's pride and like telling the story of how Winnie the Pooh is actually from Canada, like a Canadian content short.
Canada Heritage Minute or something like that. If you lived in Canada, if you're from Canada, you know that that little PSA very well. And I don't think I covered where Pooh came from in our last podcast. So here is the groundbreaking information about Pooh. So this is the name that little Christopher Robin, the real life boy, gave to a swan because there was a swan on their property. Swans are not known to come when you call them. So it was a very creative little joke where he would say, "Come here, Pooh." And if the swan didn't come to him, he could pretend he was saying, "Oh, Pooh, Pooh on you. You know, like, I don't need you anyways. Pooh," that general expression. So It was a slam against a swan.
Well, I mean, swans are jerks. Like, maybe I'm getting them confused with geese. And I'm being racist towards swans and thinking they're as mean as geese.
Geese aren't jerks. They could be jeeks. But they are the one bird that understands they are dinosaurs and they have the same rights.
I'm thinking of their jerks when they actually just have pride in themselves on the mm-hmm. level of humans.
It's called confidence. Geese get shit done. So, yes, there is actually not a lot of Pooh content. So Milne released two collections. There was 1926's Winnie the Pooh, hyphenated, and 1928's The House at Pooh Corner. Milne died in 1956, way before the Disney Corporation did anything with those characters. And while I'm sure he enjoyed all of the money the Pooh characters brought him, he really began to resent how he was only known for Winnie the Pooh and the fact that people wanted him to do more with the characters because he loved writing a variety of material. He just thought, I'll write whatever I want to. There's a huge market for writing at this time, so maybe I'll write a mystery novel. Maybe I'll write a play. Maybe I'll write a movie for this burgeoning film industry. And yes, he was a screenwriter in the very early days of British cinema, even before Alfred Hitchcock got his start.
Wow, man. Though it sounds like he had the same kind of trap as Doyle. Though I guess he didn't listen to the same of like Doyle tried to escape Sherlock Holmes and was forced to like resurrect him. But since there's only two books, then I guess I have to assume that Milne was able to like resist the public urge to have more Pooh content.
Yes, more Pooh content. And yeah, these books were very heavily marketed even at the time. He was making a ton of money off of them. And I mentioned that he wrote a mystery book. I believe he wrote two, but his more notorious mystery book is called The Red House Mystery, which is mostly famous for getting dunked on in the famous Raymond Chandler essay, The Simple Art of Murder, as an example of a poor mystery. So damn. I have read that essay back in the day, but I've never read Milne's mystery novel. And hey, maybe it's the kind of wacky mystery novel I like, and Chandler is wrong. Who knows?
Chandler doing like the old version of a Twitter thread dunking on a fellow creator. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's rough. That's Milne's real Winnie the Pooh and the other stuffed animals. Like, I got to see them in person. I didn't even know this. This was not a planned part of my trip to Manhattan. But when I went there and I was saying I wanted to go to the New York Public Library, the one in Manhattan, that honestly, it's because the Ghostbusters were there. And I was like, I want to see
it. Were they still there?
No, but it is. It's an amazing library. It's just gorgeous, full of beautiful places to read and sit. And they had like an entire exhibition of New Yorker cartoons, like original New Yorker cartoons on display. It was a great public work. But also, since 1987, Pooh and four of his best friends, Eeyore, Piglet, Kanga, and Tigger, have been living at the New York Public Library, to read directly from their website.
Okay, so they live in America now. That's
odd. Yes, I don't know why they were left or donated to the New York Public Library instead of anywhere in the UK. But yes, if you want to see the original five of those stuffed guys who have been kept in good condition, they are kept under glass since 1987. They have been there, and you can take a photo of them like I did. And I posted it on Blue Sky a while back. But yeah, it was interesting, though. If Christopher Robin is real and his imagination is real, then the 100-acre wood has become very tight and confined for our friends in their imagination zone now.
They're trapped under glass. That's a horror movie. Yes. And not like Blood and Honey, the new Pooh horror movies.
You know what? That sounds like a better Pooh horror movie than like that. Somebody who can rip it off. Rip that off and make your Pooh trapped in glass horror movie. It only needs one set. Sounds pretty easy to me.
Hey, we could do it. Everybody owns Pooh today. That's just the public domain for you. We'll get to that very soon. So Milne, he didn't like being known as a children's author. He didn't like people wanting him to write more stories. He was kind of done. All of these stories grew out of his son's interactions with his stuffed animals. And then he began to resent the amount of attention this was bringing on his real-life son. And this real-life son, Christopher Robin, would end up being very estranged from his family. So he is a valiant Nepo baby in that he turned down any royalties from his father's estate because he's like, I'm done with being Christopher Robin. Screw that. Wow. He apparently only saw his mother once in the 15 years after Milne died and before she died. So, like, very, very apart from his family. And if you want to know more about the real Christopher Robin, he wrote an autobiography in 1974 called The Enchanted Places, which seems to not be in print anymore, but it also seems to be fairly available. So if you want to know more about, like, who is Christopher Robin or Christopher Milne, you can read his thoughts about his life in the 70s from that book. And I'm curious. I just want to know, like, it's all kind of like co-opting his imagination to tell these timeless stories. Like, what was the real guy actually like? What did he end up doing? Like, and who was he in middle age?
Wow, that's really that. Yes, that sounds very cool to read or hear his side of the story after his childhood was so defined for, or I mean, honestly made like timeless forever. What was like 5 years tops of his life. Now every human knows about him, apparently, like all over the globe.
And he's been dead since, I think, 1996. So he lived through so many Pooh iterations, so many shorts and movies and so much of the merch. So he was living with it for a very long time.
Yeah, it's man, he maybe appreciated then that the New Adventures of Winnie the Pooh, I think, gave, even though it's still Christopher Robin, that he has like an American accent and it at least like dissociates it a little bit from his like British childhood, though he died not too long after that started.
Yeah. And then like later, the most recent versions of Winnie the Pooh, there's a little girl involved. So I think they're also distancing themselves from Christopher Robin. But then Disney made that 2018 movie called Christopher Robin as one last middle finger to his grave. So yes. Who knows?
We're going to make up a version of you that loved it and wants to reconnect with Winnie the Pooh.
Well, no, we're going to make fun of you for putting that behind you. But then the characters will come to life and torture you until you eventually admit it, that you love them.
I think I remember about that movie is that like they, at the start, apparently resisted having some of the regular Pooh voices voice them. And then they realized, like, no, that Winnie the Pooh has to sound like Winnie the Pooh. We can't stunt cast these characters.
They recast a lot of them, but then I think they realized, like, well, only Jim Cummings can be Winnie the Pooh, and that's kind of it.
Yeah, that's got to be a great middle finger for him to just be like, as long as I'm around, nobody accepts another voice as Winnie the Pooh or Tigger. I control the two big guys of your one of your biggest franchises as far as like merchandise goes.
And speaking of merchandise, like I said earlier, Pooh was always heavily merchandised. So Stephen Schlesinger, the godfather of licensing, licensed the character starting in the 30s. And he is the one who defined the red shirt look of the character. This version of Pooh first appeared in a 1933 board game. And Schlesinger also made a lot of money by licensing Tarzan. So when it came to this new idea of like borrowing a character, making your own merchandise of it, he was one of the pioneers of doing this. And because of this, Pooh was in board games. He was a stuffed animal. He was in picture books. This was all happening 30 plus years before Disney got its hands on the character.
Wow. He really, he set the tone for the horrible world we live in today. So thank you.
Thank you, Schlesinger. So a week after A.A. Milne's death, his widow sold the rights to the character to Schlesinger. I think the amount was $1,000.
Ooh,
and
boy.
That was more than it is today, but not that much for all of the Winnie the Pooh characters in the year 1956. So Schlesinger dies after that, and then his widow licensed the use of the characters in 1961 to Disney. So in total, this is so complicated. I'm trying to gloss over this as best as I can while keeping it entertaining. Four total British entities own the rights to Pooh. And in 2001, Disney paid $350 million to buy the other three out. Because
wow.
At that point in time, Pooh was making them in between $3 to $5 billion a year in merchandise alone. That's it.
I mean, that $350 is a lot in 2001. But to know that, like, 10 years later, they'll pay, you know, $4 billion for Star Wars. If Star Wars is worth $4 billion, Winnie the Pooh, I'd say, is at least $2 billion. I'd say he's worth it that much. And honestly, no Winnie the Pooh fans are complaining at any of the level that, like, Star Wars fans complain.
No, they stick to the rules of the universe. They don't really add new characters. There's no grand reimagining of things. I feel like the Pooh franchise has been way more consistent than Star Wars.
There's no Mary Sue's showing up to be like a
Mary
girl
Pooh,
that girl that like Pooh leaves all his honey to.
How can he drink all that honey? I didn't see him train. It's crazy.
But I do appreciate the resistance of, it would be so easy to just be like, hey, everybody, it's our new friend, a salamander there. It's Sally the salamander just showed up.
And I guess in this movie, the Baxin is just a joke until you see him very briefly at the end.
Yeah, they get away with it being a post-credits gag. And I guess, well, I haven't watched it yet. I did watch the Tigger movie, but that Heffalump movie, I suppose, does take advantage of, it makes the Heffalump idea into, like, you know what, there is a Heffalump character. So it's technically a new one, but at least it's within the bounds of the universe, I'll say that.
It's something they created like a very long time ago, so I feel that that's fair. And so we mentioned the Disney deal in 1961. That's when they licensed the characters to Disney. And this brings us three Winnie the Pooh shorts. So we first have 1966's Winnie the Pooh and the Honey Tree. This was attached to the film The Ugly Dachshund, about an ugly dog, I guess.
Okay.
And we also have 1968's Winnie the Pooh and the Blustery Day. This was attached to The Horse in the Gray Flannel Suit. And then we also have 1974's Winnie the Pooh and Tigger 2. This is attached to The Island at the Top of the World. Boy, these Disney live-action movies from this era stunk.
Oh, so bad. But their live-action movies were never much special in any time when Walt was alive. Like in the film Matinee that I watched last year as we were preparing for Looney Tunes Back in Action from Joe Dante, Joe Dante's Matinee, I watched it. There is an amazing middle part of the movie where, like, the older brother, who's the Joe Dante type character, has to take his little brother to a matinee, and it's not a horror film. It's a crappy Disney movie. Like, my father's a shopping cart, and Joe Dante parodies terrible 60s Disney films perfectly. It's really great.
Yeah, a lot of their movies were like the Love Matic Grandpa.
Gladys the Groovy Mule is basically a Disney film and almost totally entitled.
So I mentioned those three shorts. They eventually are re-released as a package film, which is 1977's The Many Adventures of Winnie the Pooh. And then Disney renegotiates their deal in 83, and that gives us a lot more Pooh content. So we have the release of a new short, which was called A Day for Eeyore, that is attached to a re-release of The Sword and the Stone. And the haunting children's show, Welcome to Pooh Corner, which Henry mentioned before, and I believe Defunctland might have a whole history of that show on their YouTube channel. It is haunting. It is giant puppet characters with humans inside and like very uncanny green screen backgrounds. It's nuts. It's really upsetting.
Yeah, they had that, and then I think a Dumbo Circus came right after with the same tech of like the level of quality was a walk around character from Disneyland in the 80s, except they were able to move the eyes and mouth slightly. These were hardly Henson level animatronics that were walking around or animated like human filled out puppets like Sweetums even.
And it was 83, so they didn't really have the technology that dinosaurs had in like 1991.
Yeah, though I mean, even like Fraggle Rock was a near contemporary of him, and I'd say, you know, that that has better full body puppets in it than this does.
Gorgs? Are they Gorgs?
The Gorgs. That's it. The Gorgs. Yes. Yeah. The
G-O-R-G, I think. Gorg?
I think the Gorgs. The
Gorgs are a Canadian rock band.
I just think of them as the royalty band. I love their scenes weren't as fun to me as like the Doozers or the Trash Heap, but they were a fun group.
Yeah, I did like those guys. So yes, the deal is renegotiated in 1983. We get a new short theatrical release. We get a new haunting children's show. And then in 1988, we get the new Adventures of Winnie the Pooh, which was Disney's follow-up to DuckTales. So it basically goes DuckTales, New Adventures of Winnie the Pooh, Chip and Dale Rescue Rangers, Tailspin, Darkwing, et cetera, et cetera. So this was a vital step in Disney's takeover of television. And this is a good series. We should really cover on What a Cartoon one day. And now that I have all the Pooh notes, we can just like roll right into the TV series, because I do remember having a really great time with this show.
Oh yeah, I would love to do it too. I bet we'll have even more poo in 2026. Mm-hmm. I think
I'm predicting more poo in our future.
You know, for that show, I watched it a little, but my husband grew up with it more. And there's a funny thing, if like it's the morning and I say like, "All right, we got to get up," and if I say we got to get up, he'll say, "Gotta get up, gotta get going, gotta meet a friend of mine," and he'll just start singing the song, the theme song.
Yeah, just like Gummy Bears and all the other Disney shows, very, very catchy theme song.
They knew they had to have a great theme song back then to keep the kids watching, as opposed to no theme songs now, and kids don't have the attention span for it.
So the New Adventures of Winnie the Pooh, that ends in 1991. And in 1991, Schlesinger is getting very mad at Disney because they are reporting that they are being underpaid for their deal with Disney. And this was kicked around for about 20 years. And then in 2009, a court ruling stated that Disney had the rights to the characters in a way that seems crooked, but ultimately, just get used to Disney winning every court case from now until they destroy the world.
Yes, yeah, I mean, it maybe seems more crooked back then, but now it just sounds, the last 30 years, like, well, yeah, every judge sides with a business, obviously. That's why That's why they're a judge.
It's not surprising. And I'm just giving the broad strokes of this battle for Pooh. So there's definitely a lot more to talk about when it comes to copyright law, but this is not the place for it. This is a 90-minute history of this movie that will roll into a longer discussion of the film. And there are many sources out there if you want to learn about the history of copyright law and how Winnie the Pooh is related to that. And also, it's also important to remember that this is not about the Milne estate. This is about someone who bought the rights to Winnie the Pooh like in the 50s. So Disney is fighting with Schlesinger. The Schlesinger did not create the character. They just happened to get in early. So, I mean, ultimately, it'd be nice if Disney didn't win, but Schlesinger is not responsible for anything outside of marketing the characters.
Yeah, and the Milne estate is highly removed from all of this. Yeah. I am in shock that, like, I thought for sure the goalpost would always be moved and things that were famous from the 30s onward would never get allowed into the public domain, but they actually have been allowed to happen. I think in 2034, should America still be around then, Superman actually will end up in the public domain, I think.
Finally. Finally, I can make my Superman movie. Move over Zack Snyder and other guy.
James Gunn? Yeah.
There you go.
Yeah.
I forgot his name. Anyhow, if you're wondering, the United States, at least, the original Winnie the Pooh book entered the public domain in 2022, and the second book, The House at Pooh Corner, entered the public domain in 2024. That means all of the Pooh characters are up for grabs, and that's why there are currently two Pooh horror films. I'm sure there will be more to come. But for about 2 years, like, Tigger was not in the public domain, but now Tigger is in the public domain. So you could have fun with Tigger now. Make your own Tigger movie. Make a Tigger movie too.
The public domain and Tigger 2. That's what it should be called. Yeah, I always thought, in our childhoods at least, for the 80s and 90s, Tigger seemed like the biggest one. Like, he was the Taz of the time. It's like that he was too energetic and annoying for the up until the 80s. But in the cocaine 80s, it's like, yeah, we love Tigger. Tigger is the right guy for now.
Well, I think, like, if you were a man, you would have a Tasmanian devil jacket. But if you were a woman, you'd have a Tigger jean jacket. You have Tigger embroidered on it, some flowers embroidered on that bad boy.
It would be that or Grumpy the dwarf.
Tweety Bird also.
Oh, Tweety Bird, yes, yeah. In crisscross outfit, of course. Yeah.
Yes. Okay, so we did cover the history of the character, where it started, when Disney got their hands on it, the copyright battle for the character, where it is today, the public domain. Now I want to rewind a little bit from 2011 to the early 90s when the New Adventures of Winnie the Pooh came to a close, because Disney didn't really stop releasing Pooh TV specials, direct-to-video movies, and theatrical movies from 1991 until 2011. This was a Pooh-packed era. And to give you an idea of the sheer amount of Pooh that we're dealing with, so by my count, I could be wrong, between 1991 and 2011, there were 4 TV specials, 9 direct-to-video movies, 2 other TV shows, not counting The New Adventures of Winnie the Pooh, and 4 theatrical releases, including this movie. Disney put Pooh on the back burner for a while, but in 2023, the brand came back in the form of 2 TV series featuring CGI shorts for very, very young children.
Wow, man. I mean, it just, I guess it always felt, you know, in the 90s, I'm paying less attention unless it is a theatrical release than I did hear a little more about it. But to hear those numbers is very, like, that is so much Pooh that Disney is just putting onto the market all at once. But, like, kids love Winnie the Pooh so much that, like, clearly the reruns aren't enough. Like, they needed new stuff every year. Though I guess, too, after the show ended in 91, that would be right around when the direct-to-video for kids market really explodes with the Tiny Toons Adventures and the Return of Jafar, that, like, they could start selling original direct-to-video stuff to kids, not just old reruns of stuff.
Oh, yeah, yeah. It really took off in that era, and they took advantage of it because this is a popular character. They know it'll sell. Adults love it. Kids love it. It's great for little kids. So it was just a money factory for Disney for a very long time.
I mean, you put in the, you buy that tape, that's 1 hour a day at least babysitter you've got for your kid each day.
1 hour of freedom.
Yeah.
So yes, that is 91 to 2011, just constant Pooh movies, TV shows, specials, games, merchandise, you name it. Disney is making money off of this character and his related friends. So what is going on with Disney in 2011? Fast forward to 2011. Well, in 2009, we have The Princess and the Frog. That hit theaters. It really underperformed by Disney standards. It looks, if you look at the numbers, it seems like a hit, but for Disney, it really wasn't. It underperformed so much that they renamed their Rapunzel film Tangled, because they're like, forget about princesses. You
Dang.
Can see this movie. It's safe.
Oh, that's sad. Yeah, like, well, at least Frozen brought back the princess pretty quickly after that. But yeah, Tangled actually was trying to sell itself as not a princess movie. You're right. I mean, I saw The Princess and the Frog in theaters. I wanted to support 2D, but it was an uphill battle. They weren't. It was for kids to like. I'm sure someday we'll get to that. But yeah, it was.
Yeah, I think so.
It was sad to think, like, this was, I guess, also in 09, what, by then, they had purchased Marvel. Like, they bought Marvel after the success of Iron Man, and it's them admitting defeat of just, like, they have to just buy the biggest things, like Marvel and Star Wars, and can't make their, and Pixar before that, they can't make their own stuff anymore.
Yeah, it looks like Disney bought Marvel at the very end of December of 2009, so just on the brink of all of this happening.
Right, right. Yeah, that's, boy, that was a crazy time, I remember. It's like, Stan Lee, like, gave an interview. He was very old then, but he gave an interview of, like, oh, you know, he's Spider-Man's just like Bambi. I remember he said, he compared it to something like that, but it's like, but Stan Lee doesn't know what he's talking about.
And he's stacking piles of money in front of him.
Yes.
Yeah, or someone's helping him. He's very frail.
Well, yes, I guess if you believe some biographies, his daughter was stacking the money in front of herself and said, oh, this is your money.
Stacking it into a bag with her name on
yes,
it.
Yes, yes.
Okay, so yeah, that's what's going on with Disney. The feature animation department is making the transition to CGI, and we can see a few clumsy attempts to beat DreamWorks at the game they're currently dominating. So the CGI era kicks off with Chicken Little, which we covered. It stinks.
Yep.
And also movies like Meet the Robinsons and Bolt. Not as bad as Chicken Little. I've seen Meet the Robinsons. I just thought it was extremely mediocre. I think Bold is probably the exact same thing. But these movies are not really connecting with people. I'm sure lots of people are seeing them. But Pixar is like ruling the roost at this time. They were critically beloved. Everybody was seeing their movies. And Disney, who owned them, is saying, well, look, we have Bolt. What, yeah. Don't you want to see Bolt?
It is surprising that they, after buying Pixar, they still kept going with their own 3D projects. I would have thought of canceling that, but then again, there's enough space for Pixar and Disney 3D films to all make $1 billion.
Yeah, it's true. Yeah, Meet the Robinsons, I know it's based on the book, and I think people have a lot of nostalgia for the book, but I checked in on this one just because I heard a bit of hype about it in like the late aughts, and it just didn't really hit me. But this is somewhat related to the director of this film, so I'm not just rolling off on a tangent here. So that's where Disney is. They are trying to make you believe in their CGI efforts. So far, no one is really believing in them. Although, again, go back to the Chicken Little podcast. Chicken Little was a big hit, so much that Disney was able to buy Pixar. That is what they needed to do.
That is unbelievable. Like, yeah, I think of Chicken Little as such a big flop, but it really, it just wasn't like Shrek 2 big was, but it's making it seem small when it wasn't.
So finally, everyone begins believing in Disney again in 2010 with Tangled. It was really the movie that at last adapted Disney's 2D animation philosophies to 3D animation. And that would only continue in the future. I have not seen Tangled. I really want to, but I have a feeling that what seemed revolutionary at the time has since been lapped many, many times with the many innovations we've seen in films like the Spider-Verse movies and the newer Ninja Turtle animated movie and things like that. But they had to start somewhere, and this was really just trying to get people to trust them with this new technology.
I watched it last year and for the first time, and yeah, I think they have some clever stuff to it, especially for then in Disney, that you imagine them much more locked in. There's a lot more cartooning going on in it, but not to the degree of, say, a comparable one from the time, Hotel Transylvania. I think it's a lot cartoonier. But I remember liking it. I actually, the evil stepmother story is an interesting take on it. I had not really seen in a Disney thing before. Hmm. And also, you know what? Paul F. Tompkins has a small role in it that he then parlayed into the Tangled TV show as well. And so, you know, Paul F. Tompkins got regular work from it. I can't hate on that.
I'm always happy when that guy gets a break.
Yeah.
He's frankly, we got to get him on a podcast.
We are not a real podcast yet until we can get PFT. It's true.
He has to smash his champagne bottle over our heads, like Chris in this podcast. So, yes, that's what's going on with Disney in 2011. People finally believe in them. I'm not sure if they hold them in the esteem of Pixar, because 2010 is Tangled. 2010 is also Toy Story 3, like what a lot of people at the time viewed as this perfect movie, and like Pixar at the height of their powers and getting all of these Oscar noms. Like Toy Story 3, I feel like it was the peak relevance of that studio.
Yeah, yeah. And then it really isn't the one we covered. Frozen is the one that it, to me, felt like that changed the perception of Disney is really back. But the Winnie the Pooh is right before that, before people realize Disney is back and never going away. Like I read a depressing fact recently that since 2023's Barbie, no movie has outside of Neja, that Chinese hit, but no American film has broken $1 billion globally, not released by Disney, not since Barbie. And that's currently still true. Like Mario, both Mario movies have gotten close, but they didn't technically break $1 billion.
Well, hey, I'm rooting for The Sheep Detectives, made by a little studio called Amazon.
I'm rooting for them. You know, they worked hard on Project Hail Mary. Now they got The Sheep Detectives. They've, you know, the Amazon Studios becoming one of your favorites this year, Bob.
It really is. Yeah, I gave Project Hail Mary 4.5. Sheep Detectives 5 out of 5. Folks, believe the hype.
I'll be watching that one soon, based on all this hype. Same with you know, I got to hear everything I hear about Devil Wears Prada 2 as well has been pretty positive, better than you'd think.
So let's move forward to the history of this particular movie. So unfortunately, like with my last episode about James and the Giant Peach, there's basically nothing out there about this movie because it was a failure. And Disney wants to move on from their failures. We're not going to shine a light on this. We're not going to reveal what went wrong. We're going to move on, put it on Disney Plus. It's one of many thumbnails you can look at and you can move on with your day. So I tried my best to scrape together what I could. We have press from the era and very little on the DVD and Blu-ray. There are like 3 deleted scenes, but no real insight into the movie, no commentary. Honestly, it does feel like this is viewed as a product for very small children, so the people buying the Blu-ray are not going to care about like seeing storyboards or hearing about like the layout department and things like that. At best, the kids might want to see like, oh, here's a song that didn't make it in. But unfortunately, I don't think this production was given the respect it deserves, especially as the final traditionally animated Disney feature.
Yeah, I could see that internally at Disney, they're like, we don't budget a lot for special features on Winnie the Pooh things because this is mainly stuff that 5-year-olds like fall asleep to, like that at nap time.
Yes. Although it was very depressing when I popped in the Blu-ray I got from the library And of course, like with any Disney Blu-ray, there's a billion trailers. In the first trailer, it was, "Welcome to the age of Disney Blu-ray, a new way to view our movies, crystal clear detail, extras, bonuses." And now all those people are dead. They were shot in the parking lot a couple weeks ago.
Well, you know, the line had to go up, and we all respect Bob Iger's payment package. Like, it's got to happen. Yeah.
It's such a tragedy when I'm saying, can I please give you money? And they're like, no.
We'll license a few things to Sony to release on their terms, but that's it. And only the biggest movies.
They could get away with charging like $80 for a Blu-ray, honestly. I'm giving them evil ideas, but I guess it's not worth the meetings for them.
No, I really do think that they see, like, they don't care to put in the amount of time it takes to make, like, a $10 million profit meaningless to Disney. Like, that is not what they want to put. That doesn't impress stockholders and increase dividends, I suppose.
Yeah, I guess so. Right now, we are putting together the most comprehensive history about this movie that is largely viewed as, like, a frivolous curiosity. Like, oh, I guess they made this, and then the company stopped doing that. Okay, but there's a lot more going on under the hood. And the brief story that we have begins with the tale of a great man, and that man's name is John Lasseter. I can see the colorful shirts and the childish demeanor that hides a dark side. So, unfortunately, we have to talk about John Lasseter. So, he takes over so many departments at Disney. He is given the keys to the kingdom. They let him, like, he's in charge of the parks at this time, right?
Oh, yeah, yeah. I mean, he ruined things for heavyset nerds with glasses. Like, I can't wear Hawaiian shirts without evoking him. And now I either got to lose more weight or just not wear Hawaiian shirts, you know?
And hugs are out of the question.
Oh, yes. No hugging. I think we have, in general, questioned better, like, you know what? Not everybody finds a hug friendly, and don't assume it's the nice thing to do. Oh, but yeah, after Pixar got bought, like, he got a great deal. Like, he was seen, we've said it before, but at the time it was like, this guy's going to save the parks. This guy is going to save the 2D films. Like, Princess and the Frog is going to happen because John Lasseter is going to make it happen. He's going to fix the Disney California Adventure into making it not shitty. And he did accomplish those things. Like, he actually pulled it off.
Yeah, I guess to put it broadly, he was in charge of Pixar, and then he was given the keys to Disney's feature animation department to run that, and then he was also in charge of Imagineering for a time until he was forced out. So, yeah, he was making a lot of things happen, and then in a November of 2008 conference call, Lasseter, who was at the point chief creative officer at Disney Feature Animation, he pitched the idea of a new theatrically animated Pooh movie for modern audiences. So this all comes from John Lasseter. Maybe he was inspired by conversations he had at Disney. Who knows? But he dropped this on people saying, why don't we do this? That'd be fun to do. Just, I guess, probably to see if there was still a hunger for this kind of animation that the world that he came from. I'm sure he loved doing CGI, but he wanted there to be, like, both worlds existing in the world of theatrical animation.
Because he was trained in 2D. He was trained in the CalArts style by the old men, who, at least some of the nine old men, I'm sure, did work on those first Winnie the Pooh shorts. And he looks to those. I'm sure he loves those. And this movie absolutely feels like it is made by fanboys of the first run of shorts. Sometimes there's takes in this that are like straight out of a Looney Tunes, but other times they're clearly influenced by The Many Adventures of Winnie the Pooh, that trilogy of shorts.
Oh, for sure. It does feel like a soft reboot or soft remake of that first movie with different stories, but the same kind of devices, the same kind of like tones and everything like that. So yes, Lasseter pitches this idea at a meeting. At this point, directors Steven Anderson and Don Hall are assigned to the project, more on them later. And they're tasked with reviewing classic Pooh shorts to find a way to revive these characters for a hip early 2010s audience. And from here, they decided the characters should return to their roots, and this new project would mine as much from Milne's source material as possible without really treading old ground. So they weren't going to sort of update the characters in a yo-yogi kind of way. They were like, these things are timeless. Maybe we can give them more of an edge or heighten the comedy a little. But ultimately, people want to see these characters in the mode they've always existed in.
I mean, even the titling of it being just Winnie the Pooh, it's almost like the way a video game resets as the Mortal Kombat, or the, like, it should be called like the Winnie the Pooh.
And I'm sure, like, everybody called the first movie Winnie the Pooh, and probably still does. And now you have to differentiate between them, because who out there is saying, honey, let's watch The Many Adventures of Winnie the Pooh. Wouldn't that be nice tonight? The Many Adventures?
No, no, no. I mean, Many Adventures of Winnie the Pooh, colon, Summer with Roo. That's the we're going to watch tonight.
Now, you see, in the 2011 movie, he does have many adventures, but the many adventures are not part of the title. It's very, it's confusing.
That's why they had to call things like The Tigger Movie, or the Piglet's Big Movie, like, just to be clear, of like, you don't own this one on VHS at home, parents. Take your kids to this. It's clearly named a new movie.
All new footage. So, yes, they decide to go back to the source. And in order to get this effort off the ground, they turn to Disney legend Bernie Madison for help. So Bernie, who was 76 when this film hit theaters, was apparently the longest serving employee of the Walt Disney Company, because his career started in 1955 with Lady and the Tramp and ended with Wish, which released in the year that he died. So he worked on Lady and the Tramp in 1955 and then Wish in 2023. So basically like a 70-year career at Disney.
That is incredible. That is very, very impressive. I would have thought that this was his last film, not Wish, the one that's made to be the like 100th birthday of Walt Disney, or the 100th. It celebrated some 100. It was the 100th anniversary of the company, something like that.
It was some centennial for something. I'm not sure what it was.
But yeah, that is an impressive career of a guy who, let's say he really liked to work. Like, yeah.
Yes. And I'm sure we covered him many times on this podcast, because we talked about a lot of things he worked on. And he was not one of the old men, but he was an old man. So he actually had worked on the third Pooh short and the package film. So they were drawing from that institutional knowledge. Like, you've worked on the things that people like. How do we capture this again? And it seems at this point it was undecided whether or not this project would consist of shorts or a series of shorts, because back when he first took over Disney's feature animation department, one of Lasseter's big initiatives he would talk about in the press is, we want to bring shorts back. That was a big idea that he had. And of course, Pixar at that point had some popular shorts. You would always you would always see a short before the Pixar movie. So they were repopularizing them. And I found a vintage interview with Lasseter in which he was planning a return to shorts starring the Fab Five of Disney, which is like Donald, Mickey, Pluto, whatever, those characters.
Right, right.
But I'm guessing this never came into being because I've seen no evidence of anything being made along those lines.
Yeah, maybe that slowly morphed into the Rudish shorts. Like, I'm trying to think, like, I think only the Oscar-nominated Lauren McMullen short, Get a Horse, I think that's the only like Mickey one that happened, and it was a very clever, great one, especially like made for 3D. But yeah, it was a nice little period of shorts coming back as a training ground for future people like that. That is the secret of why the shorts existed on Pixar films, that they were to a future director, seemingly back when they made new movies at Pixar, of course, that's where a director could train on a short.
Yeah, maybe Get a Horse was the result of all of this, and then it got a lot of acclaim and an Oscar nom, and they said, let's never do that again.